Hey everybody, I'm Layman Pascal on the Integral Stage, and here we go again, trolling the overlap between developmental, transformational, neo-spiritual, integrative, metamodern, game B, and regenerative networks emerging in the age of the meta-crisis. This whole community, this scene, this movement always gets excited when it thinks it's breaking through. And that's partly because coherent evolutionary trans pluralism has some actual answers and an actual ethos that the world might need, but it's also partly because we're pathetic and we get excited when we think people are talking about us. And one of the most recent waves of these mixed feels involved a highly viewed, entertaining, idiosyncratic breakdown of developmental theory on the Whole Math YouTube channel. If you've ever been curious about how second-tier thinking and meta-level categories can help us finally answer that perennial question of where dem hoes at, then this is what you've been looking for. I loved it because I'm a notorious misogynist, primarily interested in organic integralites, fresh twists, and encouraging a mutational liveliness that I view as necessary for the, let's say, shamanic unfolding of higher and deeper trans-perspectival philosophy in the world. So let's get holistic with Whole Math today. Hi, man. How you doing?
Hi. What's up?
Why do you think people think you're a good artist?
Because they're not good artists, and they see me make things that look like things, and they go, "I can't do that," and they're engaging in some shallow comparison.
You know, we've got a sub-series on the Integral Stage called the Meta Podcast, where we interview people who have podcasts and similar projects in this space. And when I talk to them, it seems to me like there's a split between people who want their online content to be very professional, kind of like a TV show with high production value, and a lot of others who feel like there's a sort of ragged amateurishness that's an essential part of the emerging aesthetic in a post-4chan, post-Tim and Eric kind of internet universe.
Yes.
I'm curious how you would characterize the kind of aesthetic that you're most drawn to. And also, yeah, both in terms of what you're drawn to creating and what you're drawn to consuming online. What do you think? How does the internet want things to look, so to speak?
Well, you know, it's such a broad question. I know you know that, but how the internet wants things to look is it's broken down into just an infinite, constantly changing number of subcategories, and then overarching themes. Back in the day, we used to have like Web 2.0 or whatever, and they used to talk about the click buttons, the click to purchase buttons, and some of them would say the new thing is they have shadows, and we would talk about aesthetics like in a very basic way. But what all that is really leading up to, what all that is obscuring, is what people want from the content and what people want to respond to. And the only thing I can really say, because I just don't like content, I tend away from, I like to stare out the window. I tend away from being a regular consumer very much of anything at all. So the only thing I can say about that with relevance to my work is that I think people are responding to how much I just don't care about the look. And I just go, there's an idea I need you to get. And this is the fastest way of me saying it. Do you understand it yet? And then a lot of people go, yes, actually, that did help. And I go, good, because it only took me 2 minutes. And I think that's what people like about what I'm doing. So what people want from the internet is, I mean, mostly ego validation, which is, I try to include plenty of that as well.
When and how did you start getting interested in Ken Wilber's work or work of that kind, let's say?
Well, it was a Ken Wilber book that was the very first thing that got me interested, and it was during the 2008 market crash. I had gotten out of college a bit earlier and had not been able to find a real job. And there was a point where I was unemployed and barely paying my bills in an apartment near where I grew up. And I didn't want to be there. I wanted to move to a city and start my life. But I was on a $295 a week of unemployment for the whole 99 weeks of Obama era unemployment. And with all that free time, I'm a very self-directed, autodidactic person. So I went to the library, got myself some free books. And as I was going through Art of War and Brief History of Time, I found something with a really, really smarmy looking guy on the cover that said a theory of everything. And I was like, okay, what do you mean? And I read it, and it was the same experience that a lot of people say they have. It was like, this is what I've been trying to say, but not had the words yet. This is what I've been trying to tell people, and someone already figured it out. I didn't know that existed. So from there, I just sort of started consuming more integral content and took steps towards the community for a while. Haven't really been in touch with it for a while, but I got, I guess, enough knowledge about it to make a video that the community is now responding to, hopefully positively. So that's the short story.
I'm mostly hearing good things about it. And
great.
You know, I had some Kindle overbooks when I was a kid, and they just had this picture of his head on the front. And I always imagined his neck went down to like a brontosaurus body that was shitting out books. I used to call him the Kinwilbersaurus.
Yeah.
And it seemed to me kind of like, yeah, obviously, sure, but I wasn't that interested. And it was years later, after some sort of inner experiences, I got really hungry for like languages to talk about this stuff and people to talk about this stuff with, that I went back to these communities.
Yep.
Curious what, if any, sorts of inner transformational experiences you might have gone through in terms of starting to feel like, you know, like a perspectival approach to things was necessary in order to, for you to feel like there was authenticity and explanatory power to a philosophy.
Well, you know, one of the things that they say about integral content is that it kind of installs itself on you as you read it. It's reading about development causes development, as far as I understand. I'm not sure if that's what you mean to ask there, but it was just around that time that I begin to formulate this perspective that I have now, that it really is all based on that. There's some old quote that I'm going to not say right about how problems can't be solved on the level that they came from. And we have to develop a metacognitive approach to the problem, because you can't, when you create a problem by doing something, you can't solve it by doing more of it. And that seems to be the only thing that we are doing right now. We have problems in law, so we write more laws and get more problems. We have problems with corporations, so we just make bigger corporations that do more corporation things, and it makes more of the same problems. And I just wish that there was somebody with some degree of wisdom in a seat of power who could say, no, you can't let this run unchecked like that, because here's that, like, that's what I'm trying to draw. This is what happens when you do that. You know, those problems you have every day, here's where they come from that other thing that you do. So I've always wanted that to be happening in corporations and government and all that. And this is just my best stab at it. You know, I don't know how far it's going to go. But I'm hoping that it can solve some problems for some people. And so far, you know, it's solved problems for a good number of people in their dating life and in their personal lives. I'm having some success with that, which is nice, but the dream is, you know, save the world from itself so it doesn't do what it's doing right now.
You mentioned this idea that integral content has a psychoactive and developmental effect on people by consuming it.
Yeah,
there's some suggestions that that might be the case, but there's a reciprocal problem, which is the sense that anybody at any level, so to speak, can use the ideas, words, and structures from any other level. Like at a very low level, you can use a weapon that you couldn't develop at that level. And
right.
Same with philosophy. So there's a level 3 way of speaking about level 6 truths and a level 6 way of speaking about level 3 truths, etc.
Yes.
I'm curious how you approach that kind of problem, the difference between, let's say, style and content in terms of the emergence of levels.
That's a great question. I'm not sure if I even totally understand it. How do I approach the fact that people do that?
What's your sort of first response to that?
All that I can do, which is really what I'm trying to focus on, I'm making something called Self-Maximize right now, which is I wanted it to be like a half hour video and it's turning into a book or a course. I just can't do it in a short way. And what it's designed around is for wherever you are in life, if something isn't working, I want there to be the simplest possible map for you to look at, for you to know what to do next and where to look to find the problem. Sort of get your eyes into the integral map, figure out what you're not doing that you could be or what you are doing that you're not, and fix it. And in that sense, the only thing I can do, like the way that I tell people, these are the only things you can do. The only thing I can do is understand how people are understanding things and put it to them in a way that is going to get them to do what they need to do. So the fact that we have these layers of interpretations on interpretations, it's messy. It causes a lot of, like you have a territory where there's a certain idea functioning, and then you have a territory where there's another idea functioning, and they meet each other, and then you just have problems here because they're talking past each other. We don't have appropriate boundaries because we are still treating everything any one thing and any other thing gets to be in all the territory, and we're not making distinctions, we're not making judgments about who should be doing what and where and when. And I just see problems coming from that I'm trying to show. And the only way I can do that is by doing what I recommend. I'm not sure if that really gets at the answer to the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure it does either, but I like something about it. I think a lot of what people are enjoying about your work seems to me to have its basis in a sense of clarity and humility that you bring to this in terms of focusing on what you think you can actually provide.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned that you sort of interface with what we might call the integral community, although that's a pretty amorphous concept.
Yeah, it is.
I'm curious what impressions you might have of that. I've interacted with a lot of different communities that think they're integral, and then I run into people who love some of those interactions, and I run into people who are like, oh, this was a terrible community. I'm like, well, where did you go? You went to a Facebook group chat? You're like, that's not necessarily the community.
Right.
Yeah. What was your impression?
So my impression of the community at large is that the people who are more established in it, who are more higher up and more consistent, have been doing it for longer, they seem really, really brainy, and they seem like they really know a lot of things. You know, it's not super often that I feel like I'm out of my depth, but I do feel like that a lot around people who are really solidly ensconced in the community. So I can see that they're onto things and doing things that could really matter. I don't always see them taking root. I don't always see, I heard at some point that Hillary Clinton learned of integral theory and said that she liked it and it was important, but I don't see her applying it in her career. I don't know if that ever happened. I don't know if she is, but I just can't recognize it. I also saw in the integral community a lot of kind of, I don't want to say a lot of charlatanism, but there are people who will say, I'm integral, this is integral theory, and really it's just like, I want to be your guru for $3,000. And I have, like, early on, I wasn't really able to distinguish between one and the other. And there were people saying, oh yeah, you got to do this, it's going to transform your life, and it's cost so much money. And I didn't ever know what to do with the I want to be your guru part of the community. I just sort of backed off from it. I believe that one of the pathologies of what I call level 7 or the second tier teal level is there's a kind of inauthenticity that's like, I want to be so put together that I'm just going to pretend to be even if I'm not, because that's what we do at that level. And I think there are some people presenting themselves as, I'm so put together that I can be your leader. And I don't know how to verify that. And it doesn't always seem true to me. And I don't know what I would get out of it. And those are things that make me very wary. So those are the two main things that I've seen. I've seen people who really have a lot of obvious capability, but I'm not able to see how it's making big changes in the world, which is what I want it to do. And then I see some people who I don't necessarily see a lot of capability, but they are taking up a lot of space. And so those are both kind of frustrating points for me, because I see so much value in the community and the structure and everything. And I have so far, I'm not saying it's not there, but I have so far been unable to see really strong forward motion on getting the principles applied in the real world.
Yeah, I think that's a pervasive frustration that a lot of people who are sensitive feel in these communities. I look at them mostly as, I don't know, like train stations or something. Like the places where people meet around this stuff are not representative of its potential, but they are places where you might meet the couple of people that you're interested in going mm-hmm. deeper with.
Yep.
There's something about the, you know, that whole, like, I want to be your integral guru thing.
It's yep.
very interesting, because we could be like, well, okay, maybe they're more developed in some lines than others. And so there's mm-hmm. legitimacy, and we just have to understand that they've got these deficits and these strengths.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a kind of, and I think partly because this came out of United States culture at a certain point of history, a sort of magical American futurism, we're going to enlighten you and save everything, and integral should be shiny and clean and the super rainbow that embraces everyone and solves all your problems.
Yeah,
and that's it's nice, but it's also very fragile. It means that if a little bit of mud gets on it, it looks soiled, and it like
yep.
does the simultaneous, on the one hand, hard sell, which always turns me off. And on the other hand, it then gets really fragile, like, well, it's over, it's ruined. You know, Ken Wilber was associated with this bad guy or something like that, and it's all done.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you, like, one of the things I've been trying to stress in this community for a few years is that I would like us to be more sort of anti-fragile at the cultural yep. level, rather than yep. trying to just sell the idea that we're good and wise and then collapsing when something goes wrong. We have to anticipate that we're always going to have bad allies and false versions and confusion and mess and somehow make that work for us.
Yep.
Yeah. That's not a question, but.
Well, I mean, I think I can respond to it. That concept of being anti-fragile, I always wanted to read that book. That is something that, it seems like it's just so valuable to install in anything that it can be installed in. I don't have the skill, and so I can't comment much on it. But I mean, do you have any personal insight into what the difficulty has been of making it that way? Because, you know, again, it seems like we've got some really brainy people in the field. And can they, you know, what have they done to try to make it so that when problems arise, it results in more strength? And why hasn't it, you know, well, apparently, again, I haven't been paying attention for nigh upon a decade, so I don't know if I can say that it hasn't worked, but not visibly to me, at least. Do you have any ideas about why it appears that way?
I think it's changing a little bit, and I think that change has to do with younger people coming in and people who are adapted to the digital technology a little bit more deeply. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that there's an older, bookish, kind of bureaucratic, mostly white segment that really predominated for a while,
mm-hmm.
and that they have a like a dry aesthetic and a concern about making things seem kind of professional and nice and marketable, and
yep.
they're very put off by like the kind of people who read the YouTube comment section and lament about the decline of civilization, which is an understandable emotion. But
yep.
people who come up through that start to think of it more as a playground, as something you can work with.
Sure. So
also, yeah. I just think there's a lot of, how to say this, too urban, too mental.
Sure.
People not growing up with an aesthetic that suggests that they should get a little bit messier and take more social risks in order
yeah.
to participate.
Yeah, kind of sterile. And some people use the word egghead. They say there's like that it's a bit intellectual, that it's that there isn't actually quite enough enacted integral behavior, because it's like you get up to the brain level and you're just thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking. But I had a dream about this back when I really first learned about integral theory. I was reading the Ken Wilber book. I had a dream where I was in my car on the road, and the roads were splitting off into the distance. Let's draw the sun there. And there was just traffic jams on all these roads, and nothing was happening. And spaceships came down and started abducting the cars. And I had to get out of my car and go over to this grassy hill. And there was this big tower that stuck out of it, like a big blue metal tower. And I had to go around back and climb up this ladder. And I went up into the clouds, and because I was trying to see the problems. And when I looked down, I couldn't see through the clouds. And that was the lesson, that you get all the way up there and you can't really see what you need to do anyway. So I was down here and the problem was here. And I said, well, I better go up here so I can figure it out. But then it's not visible. It's only visible from down there. And that's a lesson that I'm not sure if I don't really know if I've integrated that. I'm trying to do that with the way that I present my work, because it's very accessible, which is, it has to be for it to work. And I think it's having some of the intended effect, but I'm not really sure what it would look like for it to be fully working. So I don't know. I think that's the principle that we're talking about. Did I lose you? I don't seem to be able to see or hear you. I hope I didn't disconnect. Yeah. Yeah, it was only about... Yes. So, did any of that get recorded? Did you lose me the whole time? Okay. So, yeah, I had a dream back when I started learning about integral theory. I just drew some roads here. There was a traffic jam on them. There were spaceships abducting the cars. And I had to go climb up a tower.
Okay. Looks to me like it's functioning.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
It's all right.
Maybe you could tell us the dream again.
Sure.
For the third time.
Sure. So the dream was in response to a question about kind of accessibility, or do you remember what the question was exactly?
It had to do with like anti-fragility and messiness.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's about, I took that question as being about the application of integral theory to the world. And I brought up a dream I had right when I began studying integral theory, when I found the Wilber book for the first time, The Brief History of Everything, or A Theory of Everything. And I was doing a lot of sleeping in and having dreams at that time. And I was in a traffic jam that was stretching on there were all kinds of roads interconnected. And no one was going anywhere. Everyone was beeping their horns. There were spaceships coming down and abducting some of the cars, getting floated up. And that was very eerie. And I didn't know if I should be scared of that. So I got out of my car, went around to this grassy hill, and climbed up a tower so that I could see the problem better. But when I got up there, the clouds obscured my vision, so I could not see. And the lesson I thought was, you can climb it's like an ivory tower. You can get up there with all of your knowledge and your understanding, but if you're not in the traffic jam, then you can't solve the problems. You won't even be able to see it. We sometimes, I think that we can see things from up here, but it doesn't work until you go try to apply it and see what the problems are. And it makes me wonder if what I'm doing is an appropriate application of this. Am I in the traffic jam, or am I staying too far back because I'm just on social media? Is this something that other integral people are doing or not doing in the world? It makes me wonder how we would apply that principle and how it looks to do it and how it looks not to do it.
Yeah, I love that. It reminds me of, I'm a big fan of the early 20th century spiritual philosopher Gurdjieff, and he's got a book called Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, where he, the devil lives on Mars and visits Earth at various periods of his history. And one of the things they talk about in that book is that even though sort of God at the center of the galaxy sends his angels to try to help the Earth that's gone off course, they keep failing because they're not actually embedded in the system. And it doesn't matter how, what a high level of being you have, in the phrase of that book. If you're not from there, you don't actually know how to solve the problems because you haven't actually lived or embodied the problems.
I like to fantasize sometimes that that's me, that they put me in a human body to go deal with these problems, and that's why I just want to leave. I like to think of myself as being that special sometimes because it gets me through a couple hours. But yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. I think whether that's a metaphor or true, and man, I hope it's true because that would be way more interesting than what we're doing right now. It's really important to have the emotional experience, to have the physical experience of a problem, because looking at it intellectually, I call my channel Ho Math, and there's, you know, a series of reasons for that. Basically, someone said I didn't expect to wake up to Ho Math this morning, so I just kept the name. And I thought it was hilarious. That's how Daft Punk got their name, too. But the way that people use math as slang on the internet, it just means like a style or a type of thinking. And there's like a girl math and boy math and that all that kind of thing. So Ho Math, for me, means the way that the breakdown of our sexual and romantic relationships is affecting the world as a whole, or is affected by the world as a whole. There's, you know, mutual reciprocal effects between our relationships and our economy and our society and our happiness and how many SSRIs we're on. And it's that the math part of it is what's so important. You can't do the math without being in the numbers, in the territory of the substance that the math is being done on, because a part of it is the feeling of it. It's not just how things work. It's not just looking at how things work and coming up with solutions. It's the interior feeling. If you don't understand how unpleasant something is, you can't give people a solution that's going to be unpleasant for them. They won't want to do it, and you can't understand why. I think that that's something I've had some experiences lately that are revealing to me really clearly that contemporary science just lacks a grasp of why phenomenology is important. And they ignore the phenomenological experience of subjects in the social sciences and also of the scientists. And they sort of just say, well, my interpretation of this is correct because I am a scientist. I have gotten the correct degrees. Let's draw this guy with buck teeth. I've gotten the correct degrees, and so I am the smart guy, and so my interpretations are correct. But he's not thinking about his own reasons that he thinks that, and they're also not understanding. There's one thing in particular that I keep bringing up about there were two different measures that were taken in a certain situation, and it was assumed that people would lie at the same rate about both of those things, even though they're entirely different emotional experiences. And it's just like completely just disregarding phenomenology. And that's, you can't do the math without having the numbers. So I don't know how to fix it. I know that it's the problem.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, when I first got into these communities, I had to make some conceptual distinctions, like integralist versus integralite. Integralist was somebody who could describe the world in terms of the theory, regardless of what they were experiencing. And an integralite was somebody who I thought of as like indigenous to the vision logic space, somebody who came up with these kinds of patterns out of their own lived experience, whether or not they had the words for it and whether or not they would relate to these kinds of theories or not. And the more I look at it, the more I see it. I want to come back around to the relationship stuff because that's so much what you focused on. That the place where the rubber really seems to hit the road is in people's intimate relational lives. That seems to be where they figure out whether they can encounter the messiness or not, whether they can embody their values or not, and whether they have enough enough humor and confidence that they can get over their own perspective, embrace the perspective of others and take different angles on their own experience or not. Like it seems to all come down to these, not all of it, but a lot of it comes down to the sort of furnace of our actual emotional, sexual, and personal lives.
The application is, it's kind of how you know what level you're really functioning on. It's not what you can conceptualize. It's the way that you actually live. And it requires, I think, a lot more testing than we can do with sheets and questionnaires and that sort of thing. And ultimately, I think I'm trying to design the simplest possible way to do that. What I'm doing with my self-maximized project is I'm trying to make 2 8.5 by 11 sheets that contain all the instructions you need, not to know what to do, but to know how to find what to do. And I'm hoping that eventually I can have a system that will direct people to understand what are the lines between, you know, your responsibility and the responsibility of the world. You can't err too much in either direction. You can't take responsibility for what really belongs to someone else, and you can't give your responsibilities to someone else. And that part gets really, really fuzzy, and it's where we make a lot of our mistakes. And I think that really what we were talking about earlier with the different perspectives on perspectives overlapping and creating messy areas, I think what it really comes down to is boundaries. And having a tool to help people understand boundaries more clearly, what is on me and what is on you, I think that might be the number one most important thing to install as a feature of dealing with that aspect of can you live your values or not? Well, what does it look like to live your values? Whose responsibility is this problem? And how do we tell? I'd like to make tools for that, to make that simpler.
I think that that working at least part-time in a visual medium is essential for that. I think back to my own attempts to bring my inner experience close enough to different people's meta theories that I could start to be a critic or commentator or contributor to those theories. A lot of it had to do with me sitting on the floor all day trying to make visual maps of this stuff, trying to diagram the process so that I felt I knew it well enough. Yeah. And I think that's a subset of just multimodality. Like I could have and probably should have been dancing it out and some other kinds of things. When we get over confined to the verbal mode, then we tend to lose focus on the ability to instantiate these things as the primary element.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of dancing it out. I haven't actually tried it, but where do you come up with, when is it time for you to do something like that, for you to break away from what seems normal and to act on things in a different way? Because I think that's a really, like, potentially a great answer to the question we're talking about of how do you get in the mess of things and how do you figure it out? How do you install the emotional experience? Is it dancing? Is it, because it's not always verbal, that's for sure. When do you begin to do alternatives?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a lot of it is circumstantial. Like I think we end up in situations or people make suggestions and we either say yes or say no to those things. But I think a lot of it for myself, Two things really come to mind. And one is just a sensitivity to how long I've been in a particular mode, right? Mm-hmm. If I've been doing writing or I've been doing interviews or something like that for a couple of hours, I start to feel it subtracting from my overall capacity to understand and embody what I consider to be important.
Yeah.
And so if I can note that and also like kind of be an asshole about it, like really hate the fact that that's happening to me so that I have mm-hmm. enough energy to break away from what I'm doing and go and do something else, which for me a lot of the times is relational or sexual or yard work or hiking or drawing or all that kind of stuff, like domestic worldly tasks. Mm-hmm. And there's a learning there, I think, is that if you get the balances right, there's a pleasure to it. And then you start to become like positively addicted to that. So then you're agitated when you're off course. And then that is a signal to you that you have to shift your modality.
Okay. So you think we kind of have an internal barometer for when we're on the trail and when we're not?
I think we can develop that barometer if we put the experimental time in.
Okay. I think I can agree with how that feels. I don't have the experience or the wherewithal to comment on it further, but I think I feel it. I think that getting at that very pre-verbal part of the brain, maybe it can only be measured by your satisfaction with what you're doing. Maybe that's the only way to know if you're really on the trail.
It's certainly a plausible suggestion. Let's maybe meaningful satisfaction or something like that would be a good way to frame it. Mm-hmm. Jordan Peterson has this really interesting theory that that meaningfulness is kind of like the dashboard indicator light of how many different scales of your life you're engaging and flow in through mm-hmm. the current activity, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. So if you're doing something that benefits you in the moment, then you feel a certain amount of meaningfulness. But if it also benefits you over like the next year and the next 10 years, that kind of thing, then you feel a more intense meaningfulness. Mm-hmm. It's speculative, but I like those kinds of approaches.
Yeah.
The other thing that that I use a lot is sort of tracking multiple intelligence systems at the same time. Like I try mm-hmm. to have my moment-to-moment mindfulness be equal parts mental, emotional, and physiological. And that kind of stuff and the periodic kind of interblendings between those sets of information, I find like they guide me pretty well in terms of how much energy to put into which sorts of tasks and when to drop out of them and try something else.
What does that look like? What's an indicator you need to do something?
Yeah, great question. If let's say I'm tracking those three systems or them as an example of multiple systems in general that I might be trying to track and hold relatively balanced. Mm-hmm. When that starts sort of failing, when it starts over gravitating to one, no matter how much internal effort I'm putting into tracking them all, that's sort of an indicator. It starts to, like my attention and feeling starts to pile up into one of my systems and becomes really pressurized there.
I see. So you're sort of tracking your own multiple intelligences as you are engaging them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
trying and to how they're feeling and what they're doing.
The ground zero of my mindfulness practice.
That might be something that I should start. I think I've got one or two of them that are just on all the time and the rest have been waiting.
I'm intrigued by how all this stuff comes into the dating world and into the home math. Mm-hmm. There's obviously, clearly, intersex relations is a huge ongoing perennial human interest. And this is an age of digital services that provide that kind of stuff. But it's also an age in which a lot of people feel like they don't have adequate role models and practical philosophical instruction around that stuff. There's a famous, like, the boy crisis, loneliness and friendship and girlfriends and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff that people turn yeah. to. You know, it's a philosophically at the upper end, the kind of Jordan Peterson's, but also the Andrew Tate's and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What makes that area What makes the dating scene an interesting intellectual area for you to explore?
Well, I mean, I think that it's a really a happy accident because my success was overnight. It wasn't something that I really planned out a lot beforehand. I was trying to begin my life coaching practice, and I had a video that was unrelated to it just blow up, got 3.8 million views, and it was just a crack about some girl asking, where are the men with no hose? And I just drew for that for her, where they are. You're not answering them on Bumble. And when that happened, I just said, oh, great, I have all the skills for that. I know how to make music and graphics, and I can do the whole thing. So I made a career out of it. It's a very happy accident because I think that sexual energy is, in a Freudian sense, what fuels everything. I think that everything we do matches or mirrors or maybe grows from our sexual strategy. Whatever it is that is your survival strategy has to also be a reproductive strategy, whether that is the way that you find mates or the way that you whatever, or the way that you support other people, like an uncle role or an aunt role. Everything that I believe that everything we do emerges from that, because it's all survival based and it's all shaped around that. So having the opportunity to be known in the space of this is how we find people, and being a sort of a para reproduction guru or whatever I'm doing, it's my ability to clear up mysteries for people, to help give direction to people in that area. It releases so much energy for them and brings it into what I'm doing that it's just sort of perfect that would be the way that I found to apply my skills. So I don't think I could have asked for a better place to start. I think it's got the most pent up energy in it and the most ability to work with.
Yeah, seems like it's a perfect convergence for a number of facets of your experience, and also it's a perennial battery for human activity in general.
Yeah.
For me, it's also kind of essential to community building. Like, one of the things that's really sort of farcical about New Thought, New Culture communities is they constantly use the word community. It's aspirational, but generally we don't have communities. We have idea exchange networks of various kinds.
Yeah.
I used to say that unless we're hiring each other and dating each other and buying each other's old sofas, we don't have a community, because it's those life things that community generates itself out of. So I think the sexual and the dating and the mating and the family raising is where we have failed to put our primary attention, and therefore we don't really have community at this level. And if we don't have community, it's not really entering the world, these ideas.
Right. Yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road, is when you actually are expending energy on someone else with the trust that it's going to be worth it, which is what nobody does anymore. As time goes on, we're so much more isolated and atomized. Even when I lived in a city, it's always been such a strange thing for me to live in a really big, busy city with people all right next to each other, and they don't want to rely on each other for anything, and they don't want to know each other, they don't talk to each other. And even when I had a lot of friends, there wouldn't be a lot of mutual involvement. You know, there would be a point where I'd know someone for a certain amount of time, and then I'd try to go deeper with the relationship, and hey, here's what's really going on with me, and they go, whoa, whoa, hey, you know. The community seems to not exist at all for a lot of people. There doesn't seem to be community at all. They have only superficial relationships. This is where we get the loneliness problem. This is where we get people who don't have real friends, people who haven't dated in years. It's because we're not, like, we used to have communities that were so strong that your parents and someone else's parents would just decide who you're going to marry. And now you can spend your whole life on dating apps and going on dates and spending, you can spend your money and spend your time, and some people have no success ever. whereas we used to just have, you used to get plugged in. This is what happened with me and job searching. I have, I think, a lot of skills that could have been used in the job market, but I was just left on my own, just send in applications, and they just no for 17 years. So that disconnection, I again don't really know how to fix it, because when I have tried to do it, people seem averse to it. So I don't know how you would operate on that, but yeah, the lack of it is maybe the disconnection point in everything, or one of them. Not sure what to do about it. I wish I had more answers than questions.
I think that's always the case.
Yeah.
And it's increasingly the case at so-called higher levels. Mystery becomes more workable. It doesn't get removed.
Mystery becomes more workable?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would agree with that. I just wanted to make sure I heard you right. Yeah. Yeah, it becomes more pliable, but it's still there. Yeah.
I'm curious where you find or how you find yourself oriented politically. Like there's always numerous, metamodern integral political conversations going on. And one of the things that comes up a lot is the sense that, MAGA and woke are often the same kinds of people exhibiting roughly the same paper, chunking the population the same way, just with different symbols on their flags. There's a kind of a crypto-centrist, post-pluralist integral movement. There's a meta-progressive integral left. A lot of interest in, what's sort of false conservatism and false progressivism and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What are your general, do you have a general political sensibility?
Not really generally. There are a lot of things that I know how I feel about them. I'm very reactionary against what we refer to as wokeism. It's a lot of not true things. I don't believe that you can begin with something that's not true and get something good. I don't believe that. And in my experience, the most woke people will say and believe or pretend to believe things that it's obvious you don't think it's true. It's really clear you don't think that. But you're doing it to fit in. I'm oriented, against the kind of harm that's causing, for sure. I don't really see myself as being particularly left or particularly right or having a particular party affiliation. One thing that, something that I believe that's pretty unpopular is I don't understand how it ever got to be a popular idea that everybody should be able to have political power. People don't understand what's going on. And people, they want to understand what's going on. Everybody wants to feel like I know who should be president, but very few people understand what the role is and what it does. And I think this idea of everyone is entitled to participate in the political process doesn't yield very good outcomes, because you're kind of asking the average person at that point, not what do you want, but how do we get it? And they don't know that. So I would say that my political orientation would swing towards a system where we select leaders based on competence, not based on popularity. We have this whole money system in politics that we're not getting out of. It's just this spiral that's gone so far that you really can't ask the people making money on politics to stop doing it, because it's their whole empire relies on it. But I wish that we had a system where you could go to your neighborhood church or town hall and participate locally, and so that you'd be able to say what you value, and whoever was in charge, who would be locally selected, would just go up to the next level and go for your county or your state or whatever, and be able to say what they value. And so the values would be taken up to the top, rather than everybody just getting little cards in the mail saying vote for this guy and then voting for something and getting something else. Being able to integrate what people actually want and need and how they actually feel is is just entirely lacking in the system. We're giving people pacifiers and telling them that they're helping when they're really just, I view voting as just a waste of time. You're standing in line for a few hours to pretend that you did something and they're just going to ignore what you want. So, I mean, those are my strongest feelings about politics and how it's going right now.
Yeah, there's a, I find in these sort of thought communities, there's a lot of focus on who might be a higher level individual that we could support. And there's a lot of focus on how we sort of come together to create an ethos or a mood that combines and goes beyond values rifts between people. But there's not a lot of focus, or the people who are doing this focus aren't integrated well enough into these communities on how you design actual systems that would be the developmental correlate of higher or wiser people. Like, I think some of that you see in people who are concerned about like the lowest possible level of change is like ranked choice voting or something like that. Like people who are just thinking about what's actually one or two or three levels up in terms of how we systemically do these operations. Because I, you know, it's really interesting to look at the so-called history of wise people on the human planet.
Yeah.
Because if it worked, right, if the method of attracting people and drawing them into meditative and emotionally transformative praxis, if that was all you needed to do, we'd have a wise civilization right now. It's not adequate to change the insides of individuals. You also have to change how we like compile our group decision making. Has to get up to that same level to lock in terms of the quadrants.
Right.
So something like that. Like even that what you were saying was is I think a lot of people are very sympathetic to this notion of like a bottom up system where people could, where you'd make a decision and then somebody could go from there to the next level, there to the next level. But then how exactly do we make that decision? Like what is a smarter, more integrated, more sapient way to vote, right? Like show of hands majority is maybe only ever going to get us the counter results we're constantly seeing.
Yeah, for sure. I think that also there's an aspect to it that, I don't know, a lot of people don't want to talk about it as much, but this kind of thing, there can be, you know, individuals or groups or institutions that have fundamental incompatibility. And if you give them shared territory, they're never going to work it out. The way that I say it is I'm not sure if I read this in an integral book somewhere where I picked it up or if I wrote it, but you can't put the gay bar next to the fundamentalist mosque and say, just shake hands and enjoy each other's company, because there's a fundamental value clash that they don't want to live with each other. There has to be boundaries drawn to exclude this. You know, people are always include, but you can't include things that negate one another. And if you have two separate things that can't possibly include each other, they need their own territories. And I don't see anything anywhere that creates that right now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the important elements of visual thinking in all of this. Like you see it in Wilbur and other people who fall back on diagrams all the time to make a point, because you can easily say that everybody should be equally integrated, but as soon as you try to sketch it out, you need these dividing lines to make any sense of it. And then those dividing lines suggest something about how our systems are run. What else? I'm curious about, you know, there are some decent forms of woke, and there's a lot of gross forms of woke that just make one's heart go crazy.
Yeah.
And there's something similar between woke and like the sort of red pill concept of like, I've woken up to the biases and distortions in the system, and now
exactly
I'm a fighter against those things.
There's a great meme from the movie They Live with Rowdy Roddy Piper. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Love that movie.
Yeah, great. So the meme is that he's got the sunglasses and he takes them off as in the movie, but then he's just got another pair on. And so he just, the gif just goes over and over. He's just taking the sunglasses off forever. And that's what people don't understand. That's what the red pill people don't understand is like, okay, you've taken off one pair of sunglasses. Now you're wearing another and you're not looking at that one. They think that there's one thing blocking them from the truth. And then once you get that one thing out of the way, then you know the truth. Well, you just know a new truth. People have to understand that the person who's doing the seeing is the thing that's making the seeing. And it's a very difficult thing to get across. With the red pill stuff, like both of these sides, you're right, they have a similar aspect where they believe they found the final truth, and if only everybody adapted to it, everything would be good. I refer to red pill as boy feminism, which is, you know, they've become the thing that they hate. And what I really don't like about it is that the red pill originally from the Matrix, it meant facing painful truths. It meant whatever the truth is, I want to know it no matter how hard it is. And the guy, you know, he wakes up and understands he's just been in a machine his whole life. And the red pill people don't want painful truths. They don't want to say anything difficult. They don't want to focus on anything difficult about themselves. They just want to feel like their way is the good way. So the language gets frustrating. The language around these things gets frustrating. It can become very difficult to talk to anybody involved in it. It can be very difficult to talk to anybody who is, there's definitely a tribalism on both sides. And then there's a values, like, I would rather have the tribalism of one side than the other, but I don't want to live in a place that's run by tribalism. And it seems like we've slipped back into that. I don't know if there was ever a time in my life where people were, in general, mature adults who could have conversations around the Thanksgiving dinner table without shouting at each other. But I like to imagine that there was a time where we could have done that. And it seems like we're getting farther away.
Yeah, I don't know if it was there in the past or not, or whether that's just a way of situating our aspirational hopes for the future, but it certainly seems like the, in like a Marshall McLuhan sense, the onslaught of the digital media has disoriented everybody. So whether we had it before or not, we have to figure out how to do it using our new sense-making tools, which seem to be siloing us against each other.
Yeah. I think about this in a technological sense a lot, and I have ideas for dating apps that might solve dating app problems. I think that there are ways to use technology that, if it's not oriented towards profits, if we put profits at the top of the pyramid, then it's going to subordinate everything to profits. If we put our way of life as the top of the pyramid and you subordinate everything to that, then the technology can bring people towards being smarter and more productive and everything like that. I hear stories that in China, TikTok is showing children videos about patriotism in science and math and art. And in America, it's showing children videos about girls with half their clothes on and people shouting political opinions, and it's just like Jerry Springer garbage. And if you privilege whatever people pay attention to, that's what you get, because the lowest possible things get the most attention. In an individual life, we have to control ourselves, and you don't just eat ice cream every day because it's the most stimulating thing. You have to make better choices. But when we get into the technology, it's just ice cream every day. We're making that choice, and we don't have to. And I don't know how we could do it or if we could do it, but I would like to see us use technology to automate the improvement of people, to automate improving their decisions and only offering them good choices. I always think about this in terms of grocery stores too. When you go into the grocery store, if they're offering you 95% healthy options and then the junk food is just in one little corner, it's really easy not to buy the junk food. But if you go in and it's like the healthy stuff is over here and over here, and this is all the processed bad for you, artificial everything, then people are gonna buy a lot more of it. The exterior that you offer people is going to influence a lot of their choices. If you make it difficult for them to find the things they need, they're not going to find them. If you're offering people this constantly, it's what they're going to find. If you offer people this constantly, it's what they're going to find. For the life of me, I don't know how we got to a point where we're not offering this. Do people not see the value? Do they not care? Are we run by people who think it's funny that they're giving everyone garbage because they get to make money? Do they think that there's a value in that? I wouldn't think there was a value in that. I don't care how much money I got. I wouldn't want to ruin a nation by filling all the heads of everyone with garbage. I don't know how we got there. But I'd like to see if we could use the technology that is currently operating to turn that around.
Yeah, my sort of sci-fi fantasy for years has been some kind of well-informed, constantly updated automaton of myself that uses the internet, because I can't possibly, an individual can't possibly make use of the system, right? It would have to run 24/7 and scan so many things that my ability to think of what I want and turn that into words and type that in and evaluate the results is a joke. It's so inconsequential. So it would have to run all the time, and it would run all the time based on a profile of me that it has, and I would be able to offer feedback as to whether I thought that was successful. And that feedback could come from both my consciousness and also brain scans and also what's happening in my life and that kind of stuff. But then you need something like, at least integral theory, hopefully something even better, to be the profile of the individual that uses that system, as opposed to the way the state or a corporation might profile you into a couple of clunky variables. And it has to be understood as a constantly evolving profile as well. And in the fantasy world, you have like autonomy over that information profile, and you can like share it out in various ways to participate or get to participate in other sort of social things. So there's a lot of ways to imagine how that goes. I'm really curious, what your what is your fantasy dating site look like? How does it operate?
The main selling point is that you have limited options, and so does everyone else. So you need to be very careful about how you spend them. There needs to be some kind of investment so that people can't use it and all the other sites. It would be like you spend money on it or something, or I don't know how we would not allow people to use the other apps, but it's a work in progress. But the selling point would be when you're talking to someone, they don't have 1400 other matches. There's limits. You can only talk to the people that you really seriously want to talk to. And that would solve, I think, a lot of the problems of people being flaky and people trying to get away with things. There's always guys trying to get away with, cheap hookups and letting girls think that there might be more. There's girls that just want free dinners. There should be something in the technology that punishes that kind of behavior and makes it not worth it to do that. And that would be the selling point. So anybody who wants to behave like that would just be not be using that app because it's not going to get them what they want. And then you're going to have those people clustering on Tinder or whatever is the other one that where they allow that, and you're going to have the more serious people come to the one that works. I think back in the day they had eHarmony, and that one was pretty highly spoken of. I don't know what happened to it, but I heard people used to say that it was good at finding good long-term matches. And I don't know what metrics they used or how that worked or why it's not working anymore, or why it's not here anymore.
Yeah, that could be circumstantial economic stuff, but also it seems like there's been a degradation in the ability of search and matching functions, because the incentive is to make them not work really well. Like my personal story is from a couple of years ago. My lawnmower broke down. I decided to get an electric string trimmer to cut the grass, and so I ordered one. I bought one, and in the subsequent months, I got this flood of advertising for this particular product from various sources, right? So it obviously didn't herd me or track me, but I thought nobody needs one less than a person who just got one. I'm actually right. the worst possible target for this advertising.
Yeah, that was
they don't
very
care
dumb.
Because I'm not paying them. The advertiser is paying them. So they are incentivized right. to make it look like I might want that when clearly I don't. So I think yep. there's been a diminishment in the ability of algorithms to provide to the user what the user is actually looking for.
Yes. I've definitely noticed that. I've definitely commented on that as well. There was a very long time that I never bought anything that I saw from an internet ad. I think the first time it happened was in like 2015 or something. And I bought a car a little while ago, and then I started getting ads for cars. It's exactly the same thing. You think I want to? The lack of integration, the lack of ability to see through the process to understand what is the right way to target attention, it feels like it is all based in siloing. It feels like it's all based in people trying to make the technology work for me versus the technology working together as a whole. And the way my mind works, I might be wrong about this, but the only way I can think to solve that is through law. That if you're going to use technology that has this kind of power, you have to do it responsibly. You can't just fool people into thinking this person might want to buy a car when they just bought a car. That seems immoral. It seems like not the right way to use technology to get more money for yourself in a way that is guaranteed not to be giving the customer what they want. It's not a good target. And that, as an example, is, I think, what's happening with technology in general. It's delivering the information to the wrong places because people are just being kind of, I don't know, like ratty about it. They're just saying, there's a way I can direct money towards myself. And I don't know, can you make that illegal? Can you detect it? Can you ban it? What can you do about that use of technology? There was something... A story that I'm not sure if it's true, but it definitely sounds true. It feels true. There was a story I heard about an AI Gordon Ramsay. They had AI create Gordon Ramsay and have him promote something. And there was a girl telling her boyfriend that it's just AI and it's not actually him. And the boyfriend couldn't get it. And he just kept saying, it's Gordon Ramsay says he likes it. So it's good. So we should get it. And he even when she told him what was happening, he wasn't able to snap out of it. If that is true, which it definitely feels true, is that the future that we're preparing for? That people are going to be walking around repeating whatever it was that they saw on the phone? Is it going to get to the point where it's going to start fooling smarter, more sophisticated people all the time? It feels like that's going to remove all of the value from society if it hasn't already gone, if it hasn't already been turned into plastic and thrown into a pit somewhere. It feels like that ability to deceive and to redirect value, because it's all about value. That's something that I want to make a video on. I want to really clarify for people what value is and how we create it and how you should not waste it and how... A lot of people feel entitled to value that they didn't actually do anything for, and how a lot of problems in humanity are that you got to get up and go through your day and you have to work and you're creating a certain amount of value by doing that. Imagine throwing 99% of it away. Life would be impossible. So then look, this wastes value, that wastes value. This the dating app does it this way. The government does it that way. I want to popularize that concept and clarify that for people, because that seems like something that is a really integral part of why life is getting harder, that value is just being wasted by directing it to places where it has no benefit.
Yeah, I agree. People don't think through the dynamics of the effort involved in the production of value. And the way mm-hmm. they have to hold that in their consciousness, and the fact that they need to progressively take sovereignty or agency for their ability to access value, because the systems we've got set up will just degrade that over time. And the Gordon Ramsay thing, I mean, I heard somebody told me the other day that a fake Joe Biden had made robocalls telling people not to vote in a primary or something like that. Hey. That kind of thing, the ability for all information to be simulated and manipulated is growing stronger each day. And I feel like the culture is feeling it. Like, we're feeling disturbed. We're feeling weirded out by things. But I don't think we're conceptually taking seriously enough the fact that all information is going to be unreliable very soon. And we have to adapt to some alternative form of sense making to get through that.
Yep. I had a friend a while back, really when I just started learning about Integral in about 2008, 2009, and she was way ahead of the game. She was urging me not to consider any information valid unless I could see it being created. So if it's being posted on the internet, is it live? Are you sure it's live? Is this coming directly from, could it have been altered? Could it be? She was of the opinion that, you know, and it gets into conspiracy theory territory, but she was of the opinion that they already have all of the tools necessary to make anything look real. There could be celebrities that are dead and they've been generating them in movies for decades. There could be no Jim Carrey. None of us would ever know. The fact that we are obviously trending towards that technology means that it can be created. If it can be created, maybe it's been around longer than we know and they've been using it without us knowing about it. And we're just kind of gradually catching on to that. So she lived a life where she didn't consider any information true unless she could verify, you know, where it was coming from and where it was being created. And that's a very low information life, which sounds relaxing, to be honest. I think I might be pursuing a low information life soon, considering where I want to be living. And I might just want to chop wood for the rest of my life, because there's not a lot of worry about whether or not it's wood, you know, it's just there.
Yeah, there's a lot of this stuff that can't be addressed socially and conceptually and digitally. It's that our ancestors anchored this stuff. But our ancestors are fascinating to me. I do a lot of sort of, I don't know, meta-shamanic activism, something like that. But being immersed in ecological environments counterbalances this to a significant degree. Mm-hmm. And then the other side is the self-development tactics. They use the heuristics for inner evolution used by our ancestors were not overtly cognitive in the way that a lot of our contemporary models are, right? That drumming and dancing and visions and entheogens and things like that are not as straightforward as watching yourself and meditating and trying to get meta perspectives. Go ahead.
It's more playful. It's more playful. We're very linear, and we're always what book did you read that in? Where was the order of words that you got that from? Is the question we always ask each other. Whereas there's a lot more playful, more formless ways to get knowledge that we are ignoring, I think.
Yeah, you can just say the mountain told you.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm thinking about the when we were talking about the red pill, so I've been asked to be on a podcast about spiral dynamics and dating in a couple of days. So one of the questions they were trying to prompt with was around the pills of different colors. And I liked the way you were describing the red pill. I think maybe I'll grab that and attribute it to you, the boy feminism phrase. It also reminds me of something. The psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan had this phrase, les non-dupes errant, the non-dupes go astray. The kind of like there's a gullibility when you think you've seen through the system. You're willing to believe almost anything that makes you feel like you're the one who's escaped the delusion. So there's an extreme gullibility in that. But I wonder what your take is on the other pills, on like blue pill and black pill, let's say.
I struggle to understand really what they are. I have not consumed a lot of this content before I started creating it. The red pill, just to recap, I think began as you gotta face the truth, buddy, and became boy feminism, and there's just a lot of crap in it. The blue pill, I think, it originated as please don't tell me the truth. I just want to relax. I don't want to know anything. I don't want any responsibility. Let the world happen around me. There's this boomer meme of a bald guy with the fuzzy hair around the side of his head, and he's got a grill, and he's grilling hamburgers, and he says, I just want a grill, and he's got a dopey smile, and he's wearing like a, button-down shirt. And that whole idea of I just want to grill, meaning I don't care what's going on around me. I've seen some really good takes on that. Like he realizes that he's grilling bug burgers. And it's like, oh, well, maybe you should have cared about what was going into your food. I've never been able to do that. I've never been able to take that angle on philosophy of I don't want to know. I'm doomed to want to know what's going on. But I think that blue pill. It doesn't. I don't think anybody who talks about these things thinks of it that way anymore. I think they think of it as just be nice and be romantic and do the traditional things that we say to do, and that's the best way. Don't pay attention to the darker aspects of psychology. Don't pay attention to like what is it that makes people cheat and what do people really want. Just get out there and be yourself. And it sort of is in a slippery way, like the old blue pill. It's like, just don't pay attention to those things. It's almost saying just don't pay attention to those things, whether they're real or not. Just be nice and see what happens. And I think there's more of a wisdom to that than just ignoring the truth, because then you don't have to worry yourself about this stuff and you can just take what comes. I've never been able to do that. I have to be in more control of my life than that. I don't want to just float through it. The black pill, I think, is based around young men who feel that they never will be attractive to women for whatever reason. There's like short guys and men with other various traits that are considered unattractive. And I think that what they do is they sit around all day watching videos about how they're never going to be happy, and then they hate life. And I don't know why you would want to do that either. Are they're just looking for reinforcement of their ideas because it feels good momentarily? I don't get why you would want to do that. Again, I haven't watched enough of it to really understand. Sometimes people accuse me of being black pill because I will say that women prefer tall men or something, which is just true. It's very true. It's not true of everybody. But I don't really understand why people create those things, why the black pill in particular. I understand why people do red pill. I understand why people do blue pill, or whether or not they're doing it consciously. I don't understand why people would say, like, one of the things they say is, it's so over. I don't know if you know about that.
No, what's that?
It's so over. It's just a phrase that I hear a lot around the black pill. And they have, memes of sad looking characters, and they're basically just saying, it's that nothing's ever going to happen for me. And sometimes people will send me videos on TikTok that just have, proof that nothing is ever going to happen for you if you have this or that characteristic. And it's almost like, I think the value of it, of that kind of content, is that it feels validating towards their experience. So I haven't been able to get a girlfriend, but it's because I'm short and it's not because of anything I can change. So it's a removal of responsibility. And I think that that's, the great irony of all of this stuff. Like we have so much information and people are not using it to take more responsibility. They're using it to take less, to satisfy their egos and to ignore what they could be doing better or different. I think they all have that in common, all the pills. And there's a bunch of other ones too. There's white pill, and there's, I don't know. I have less to say about them as they get more and more obscure.
Yeah, preparing for this, I have been trying to imagine what I think would be, a turquoise pill or some kind of higher level pill. What would be what would be the kind of pill you could get behind?
I always tell people that I'm clear pilled, so just like a dotted line. And what I take that to mean is that whenever you get to the pill part of your consciousness, where you're deciding what it is that you believe, you should probably just try to ignore it. Whatever it is that you believe, try to forget it and just look at what you're seeing, because there's a lot of really just jaw-dropping crazy things happening right now, where people will see something right in front of their faces and you're seeing it with your eyes, and then there's words next to it, and then the words say something that's not the thing that's happening, and they believe the words instead of what they're seeing right in front of them. And that capacity of the human mind really makes me not feel comfortable. I don't like that. There was something on Joe Rogan, I think, about how there was a video of something that had gone wrong in China that was the responsibility of either the CCP or a Chinese corporation of some sort. And there was a video of something clearly like illegal or that shouldn't be happening. And they showed it to an official who was responsible. And he said, I don't see what you're saying. And they're both watching the video, and he goes, I don't see that. This looks fine to me. And then move on to the next thing. And it was just like, sweep it under the rug. That ability of words to hide perception in consciousness is what is going to happen anytime you think you have a pill. Anytime you think you have it figured out, anytime you have a belief set, your belief set is obscuring something. And that's the clear pill. Get rid of it. Stop believing things. Just look.
Yeah, I like that. It's got a nice Taoist edge to it. Reminds me of. I had this friend, and she and I used to meet at the museum in Victoria where we lived. And so very often I'd be there with a coffee early. And so I would see people coming through the museum. And it included a lot of groups of kids who'd been brought by their school. And I would watch them. They'd been given pieces of paper. They had to like prove they'd seen and learned things. And they would run up to exhibits and they would see the exhibit for a fraction of a second. And then they would read the card that named the exhibit and write something down and move on. And they hadn't seen the item at all. They'd move immediately to the naming function, which seems, I mean, it's fascinating when we think in terms of developmental depth, because it's a slightly additional function. Yes, people who are more cognitively and emotionally nuanced are able to make these distinctions and fold more information in. But the problem of our sense-making getting hijacked by words and symbols seems to exist at just about all the levels. And to kind of negotiate whether you're really able to understand what you're viewing from your level, or whether you're like just replacing it with some sort of superficial arbitrary simulation that might even cause you to function at a level lower than the one you're capable of seeing the world through.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like, the map and the territory, if I'm hearing you right.
Yeah. And obviously maps can be their own kind of territory, and both maps and territories are useful. But when you look for the territory and find the map instead, but treat it as if it was the territory, then we've got a problem.
Right.
I think a lot about, somebody told me this about trans fats, that they're not toxic, but they have a toxic effect on your body because they take the place of healthy fats.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested in the way that,
what is the difference?
Superficial, symbolic, and verbal content sabotages our ability to understand something, even though it might be valuable on its own.
Yeah, that sentence, that phrasing, makes it sound like it's fine to eat them. It makes it sound like it isn't toxic. It just has toxic effects. Well, what is the difference between those things? Is it bad for you or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that diversification of symbol sets is what is making things really hard right now. And I think that times were better in a spiritual sense when we had a unification of symbol sets. It's the Tower of Babel. This is what I always tell people, is that, you know, Whether or not you want to believe in any part of the Bible, literally or metaphorically or anything like that, there's a lot of parts in it that definitely replicate themselves in our world. And it might be something that just humans do over time, and that's why they wrote it down. It could be like the tsunami in 2004 that killed a bunch of people in Southeast Asia. They had signs, you know, they had the ocean, and then they had signs saying, don't build past here, like ancient signs saying, don't build here. And they ignored the signs and they put in, you know, hotels and towns and everything. And then the tsunami came. And the sign was the ancient wisdom telling people what to do. How much of that is in our books? How much of that is in things like the Bible? How much of that is the Tower of Babel? Doesn't that just maybe say, don't build here? Don't smash everything together and diversify your symbol sets, because then people won't understand each other. They'll talk past each other and then everything's going to fall down. It seems that way to me. I don't know how to communicate that to people. And I don't know if it's too late to do anything about it. I don't know if it's like a genie out of the bottle effect, or if we can recontain things, or if we're just, again, maybe that's why I'm just so drawn to chopping wood. Maybe that's the only way through. Just make sure you can start a fire and kill a moose.
I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for fallback and drop out of the system. I think people are working on some alternatives, but those will be small local kinds of projects. In terms of turning the whole thing around, I think we're going to have to go through the jungle and restart at a different scale, right? Like we're going to have to come to terms with the new technology and also come to terms with being kind of planetary, which means being transcultural. But for some considerable amount of time, being transcultural just means that every possible variant of culture and language is going to be getting in each other's way and making it all seem kind of hollow and valueless.
Yep. Yeah. That's the part that's not fun. The hollow and valueless part. That's why I moved.
You do a kind of performative pseudo anonymity when you show up online. Is that based in how you feel about yourself, or is it like a performative character move that's become your style, or?
It's a part of my style. I also don't really want people knowing exactly who I am. I don't know how easy it would be to find out. I just don't like saying things that are true, because then people try to make life hard for you. And I want to distance myself from it. So I don't know how pseudo it is. I hope it's not a lot less than I think. But I just kind of want distance from... I want to be able to talk at things, you know, and I'm not sure to what degree I'm going to go get involved in it. I, you know, it's still within the first year. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to go be talking on stages and, you know, arguing with Ben Shapiro or whatever at some point. But, the reason for that is it's mostly just personal comfort. It's nothing to do with my conception of myself. I have a very big ego, and I believe I should be listened to by all. It's not based in any kind of shame or anything. It's just based in, like, I'm just kind of tired of the whole thing right now. And, I'd like to be able to talk without being present as much as possible.
No, I like it. It's distinctive. And, like you said, I think the distance is important. I mean, one of the arguments about the difference between reading books and using digital technology is that books give you a kind of thoughtful distance from the content where you can try to make up your own mind, and digital media tends to be so immersive, it's difficult to find the thread of your own perspective. So anything that allows us to do that a little bit better seems useful.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess we're coming to the end of this. One thing I'd like to say is that I appreciate your humor, particularly where it's like self-deprecating by being anti-self-deprecating, because I think it gets to, and a lot of people who are capable of higher vision and larger philosophical frameworks And it's easy to accuse them of being, of thinking they're smarter than everyone else or thinking they're special. And that's partly true and it's partly not true. So owning that is just an immediate great pressure release valve for all that shit. And I wish more people in the Android community would just show up and say, hey, we think we're smarter than you.
I'm glad that you recognize that. Some people think that I really mean it and they're not seeing the subtle irony. Like, I do think that I'm smarter than whatever 90 whatever percent of people, but also I want you to know I know that so that you know where I'm coming from. And some people just completely miss the second part. So yeah, appreciate that.
Anything else you want to talk about before we finish up?
I mean, I didn't come prepared with questions. I just kind of, I would really love to know everything about what the community thinks about what I'm doing. I want to get any corrections. You know, I've had a lot of people in my inbox saying, I think maybe say it this way. I appreciate all of that. I hope that I am bringing a lot of positive energy to the community. And, I really am looking forward to in what ways I'm going to work with different sorts of people as this goes on. So I don't know specifically what to ask about any of that, but it is what I'm curious about in relation to, you know, I've chosen to make the whole integral thing a part of my work, and the integral people are going to have various opinions about that, and I'd like to get to know more.